Okay, this morning we're going to be in chapter 18 of Isaiah. A little short chapter, got some good thought processes in it. And we got to dig in it. I want you to remind you one more time, not just the ones here, but the ones that's listening wherever, all over the country, the world, whatever, on the web, through CDs and other ministry, whatever. But anyway, we got to keep our focus on that this, to read it in the natural, does us really no good. It's not a history book. It's not a natural book. It's a supernatural, spiritual book, and it's about an internal work in us. So we've got to see the aspect of this chapter is, although it's difficult at times it may be to understand, we've got to realize this is something going on internal. So we've got to find out what all the symbolism is in this chapter so we can understand what he's trying to convey to us to put into our inner being. Okay? So I'll read just seven verses, but there's a lot here. Woe to the land, chapter 18, verse 1. Woe to the land shadowing with wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, that sends ambassadors by the sea, even in vessels of bulrushes upon the water, saying, go ye swift messengers to a nation scattered and peeled, to a nation terrible from their beginning hitherto, a nation meted out and trodden down, whose land the rivers have spoiled. All ye inhabitants of the world and dwellers of the earth, see ye, when he lifts up an ensign on the mountains, and when he blows a trumpet, hear ye. Excuse me. For so the Lord said to me, I will take my rest, and I will consider in my dwelling place like a clear heat upon the herbs, and like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. For the harvest, when the bud is perfect, and the sour grape is ripening in the flower, he shall both cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks, and take away and cut down the branches. They shall be left together unto the fowls of the mountains, and to the beasts of the earth, and the fowls shall summer upon them, and all the beasts of the earth shall winter upon them. In that time shall the present be brought unto the Lord of hosts of a people scattered and peeled, from a people terrible from their beginning hitherto, a nation meted out and trodden underfoot, whose land the rivers have spoiled, to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, the Mount Zion. Now I know that doesn't make a whole lot of understanding to you when you read it. Doesn't to me without spending a lot of time. I spent a lot of time with this little chapter. And it's complicated in the natural. If you try to think anything in the natural, it's going to make you just spin your wheels. Okay? So let's go back and see what we're talking about. He said, woe. What's the little word, woe?
Pain, grief, and suffering.
Pain, grief, and suffering. Okay? To the land, not shadowing, but whirring. Whirring, W-H-I-R-R-I-N-G, whirring, like when the wings of the birds are flapping and going, you know, making a lot of noise. You know, like you hear a whole covey of birds go up, the wings, the sound of the wings.
W-H-I-R-R-I-N-G.
Yeah, whirring. Yeah, that's what it should say. Whirring with wings. Now, first of all, we know this is all symbolic language, correct? So we know we're not really talking about literally, physically wings. Wings mean something. What do wings represent? Couldn't hear you.
I'm thinking freedom.
Now, wings speak of strength, the strength to move and to fly, okay? Speaks of strength. So it talks about a land whirring with strength, okay? So there's a lot of activity, because, and they're doing it in their own strength, okay? The strength of the beast, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. Now, Ethiopia, actually the Hebrew word there is Cush, and some of the translations will actually say Cush in them. Okay? Black, Cush means black, but it's actually talking about a nation of people in the world. Black does not always necessarily mean the color black, does it? Because it's symbolic and means ignorance. So it's talking about the worldly people, not these literal countries. It's talking about the ignorance, and where is ignorance at? It's in the minds of humanity, okay? And it tells us that in the next verse, when we go into it, it says it sends ambassadors by the sea or through the sea, okay? That little word by is not literally there anyway. It's just an added word, and you could put your own word in and it makes more sense, that they send ambassadors through the sea, okay? And what is the sea? It's the multitude of humanity. Even in vessels of bulrushes. And what is a bulrush? No, it's a plant. It's a water plant. Okay? It can be a reed or a water plant. Okay? And it's, and when it says a bulrush, it's literally, like I say, it's a water plant that grows around the lakes and rivers. Now, think about this a minute. Something growing in humanity. So what would that be?
Why?
How about flesh? Remember it says all herbs are flesh? So it's a plant. It's a growing plant. So if you go through the different symbolisms, you can, it'll point you to the flesh. So it says, even in the vessels of flesh, up on the waters. And what is the waters? It's the faith, the word waters is upon the waters. And literally there's two words here. They don't show you the other word. It should be up on the face of the waters. It's panim. There's a word they leave out, the Hebrew word panim. And it's in the writings, but they just didn't even use it. They just put the waters. And it should say up on the face of the waters. Okay? Now, if the waters is humanity, what's the face represent? Your identity or your mind. See? So they send these, they send ambassadors through the humanity, even in vessels of flesh, right? Upon the face of the waters or through the minds, saying, go ye swift messengers to a nation. Now what would those swift messengers be?
Thoughts.
So he's sending minds, things through your mind quickly. How long does it take a thought to pass through your mind? I mean, it's just a millisecond. You know, I don't know if you can even time a thought what's going through. It's just zip, it's gone, isn't it? It's through there. So that's those swift messengers that we're getting from the negative side, because we're talking about a negative place here, aren't we? That dark place, Cush, black, ignorant, right? So we're talking about these negative things coming through to a nation, and that nation, let's just make it what it should be, an imagination. An imagination, and it says scattered and peeled. That's not what it literally says. It literally says tall and smooth. Okay, tall and smooth, literally speaking of a nation of people in the midst of Africa. And did you ever notice that a lot of Africans today, African Americans even, shave their heads? There's a lot of the tribes in Africa, you don't see any hair on their head. Do you think they grow that way? See, they're peeled. Why do you think they shave their head? Heat. It's so hot. How hard would you take care of all that hair? If you shave your heads, guess what? It's a whole lot easier to be clean in an environment where you can't stay clean, wouldn't it? In that heat, in the jungle life, in the desert life. It'd be very hard with hair to keep it clean, wouldn't it? Be matted all the time. So that they shave their heads. And he's identifying these people in the negative, you know, tall, dark. You know, and we're talking about ignorance here. We're not talking about a nation of people. We're talking about them thoughts. To a people terrible, or literally that word terrible should be to be feared. A people or thoughts to be feared. If we entertain those thoughts coming through our mind, guess what happens?
Fear
comes upon you. And next thing you know, you'll be believing what they're trying to, message they're bringing to you.
Yeah.
That's right. If you refuse to receive and believe the truth, he'll send you a strong delusion. You will believe the lie. From their beginning hitherto, and that section right there should say their beginning hitherto should be at this time onward. From this time onward, they have been identified, is what he's trying to tell you. Once you have the mind isolated and you understand that that carnal mind has messengers coming through that fleshly thinking from the dark side, the ignorant side of ignorance, he's warning you. Wouldn't you? Can you see that? You're being warned. You're identified here. From here on out, be afraid of those thought processes that are not of God. Isn't that simple? But if we don't know who God is, if we've never heard His voice, if we've never learned His nature and character, guess what we're going to do? We're going to fall for those things. See? We're going to fall for them. And it says, a nation meted out. And literally, it should say mighty. A nation that's mighty. Those imaginations are pretty powerful, aren't they? Those things in there that beat on you daily, trying to get you to go their direction. They're pretty powerful, aren't they? and trodden down. Literally, it should say that they are mighty and they are oppressive. Whose land the rivers have spoiled. I love this part. The land, what is the land? It's in your mind. This is all an internal work. And the rivers have spoiled. No, the word should be divided. Now, look at this one. Isn't a double-minded man unstable in all of his ways? So if the rivers have spoiled it, we're not talking about the natural land of Africa, where from Ethiopia, where the rivers, you know, the Euphrates and the Nile come through there and separate land. That's the physical telling you about the spiritual. When you have these thought processes from the rivers, and what is a river? It's moving, rushing water. That's humanity and all these thoughts of humanity pushing against you, dividing you in your thought process, trying to argue with you that you're making the right decision to follow the crazy stuff that the world and the mind gives us. See, it's separated, it's split. So you're going to be unstable in all your ways. So you're dealing with unstable thoughts, right? In your mind, whenever you let that pressure from the water that they give you, that rushing water that separates your land. And don't we know that there was, even in the Garden of Eden, there was rivers going out dividing it in fours. There was four rivers going out of it. There was something, it was completely divided even back then, but he had to expose it by Adam that the land was not perfect yet up here. Right? And look what he says in verse 3. Beautiful statement. He says, all you inhabitants of the world. Who?
All.
Who would that cover?
Everyone.
If all the inhabitants of the world. Okay. Now you know we're not of this world, but we're in the world, right? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about that. But we all, and he goes back and clarifies it in the next part so you get it right. All you inhabitants of the world and dwellers on the earth. Clarifies it there. Everybody that dwells on this earth. Right? See, when he lifts up an ensign on the mountain. When he lifts up an ensign, what do you think that was?
Crucifixion.
That's the crucifixion.
In you.
You have to see it. Well, you have to realize that when he hung on that cross, when he took the sin of the world to the cross, I was on that cross. If I can't see that, I'm never going to go beyond that point, am I? I got to see this step before I can go to the next one. So he says, I want you to see when he lifts up that ensign. Everybody's got a different time to see that sign. Whenever it's God's timing. Every man in his own order. Correct? So, when you see this ensign being lifted up on the mountains, you know. And then it says, when he blows a trumpet, that's the ram's horn. And you know what the ram's horn was used for, basically? A warning. A signal, danger impending. So he's saying, whenever he warns you about something, do what? The word says, Shama. Hear intelligently with the intent to respond positively. See? To respond the way you should. See, so it's a little tiny chapter, but there's beautiful things in here. The whole gospel is in here. The crucifixion, the resurrection, it's all here. And see, when that trumpet blows, what are you going to do? It even says when the trumpet sounds, the dead in Christ will rise, won't they? Okay? It's all there. Verse 4 says, because so the Lord said to me, I will take my rest and I will consider in my dwelling place like a clear heat or a dazzling heat in the sun upon the herbs, the bright plants, the tender plants, you know. He said, I'm going to do it. And there's several ways you can look at that bright plants. Plants can also speak of humanity, can't they? All those bright thoughts we have from our human side. And he said, my dazzling heat's going to come on them. Now, if that dazzling heat comes upon a plant that has no root, no foundation in the earth, what's going to happen to it? It's going to shrivel up and die. And just like the parable of the sower, the soil, if it's not right, you know, you're going to have a problem when the sun comes up. Okay? And like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. Now, in harvest time, we're talking about August, late August, September. Okay? You're looking at a time, and it could be September, October, over a little bit of October, at the Feast of Tabernacles when they celebrated afterwards, but usually July, August, and September is when they harvested the crops in the fields. And a real heavy dew, what does it do to it?
Freezes.
I can't hear you.
Freezes.
No, it slows it down because you have to wait for the dew to evaporate off your crops. You can't harvest them in that. So it's going to create a hindrance, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's too wet and trashy. You'll see the farmers around here when they're harvesting, even with their combines in the big river bottoms, when they'll be out there at night with the headlights on, running those big combines, and when the dew sets in, they have to stop because it'll bind everything up. It's wet and just gums it all up and tears their equipment up. And it's the same thing here. He's talking about with this cloud of dew. It's not what they want. They're expecting a harvest, and when it comes time, he said, because of all this stuff, it's prior to what we were getting at right here, he said, I'm going to sit back and let the dazzling heat take care of the ones that have root. That sun will make them grow, won't it? When they don't have root, they'll be sorted out, won't they? It's another way of harvest. Verse 5, it goes on and says, because before the harvest, when the bud is perfect and the sour grape is ripening into flower, he shall both cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks and take away and cut down the branches. And actually it says the spreading branches. Okay?
What kind of branches?
The spreading, the ones that spread out.
Okay.
The spreading branches. That's what it literally says in the language. But what he's saying here, he's going to cut down. And you know what's the most productive part of the plant? I mean, the root is the foundation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But those little tiny branches is where all the fruit comes from. Is it not?
And it's amazing to look at them. You wouldn't think they would ever hold up the
fruit. You wouldn't think they'd hold the fruit or could even produce the fruit. I mean, it comes from the root, from Christ. But yet it all comes out of the little branches, the ones reaching out at the ends. That's where all the good fruit's at, isn't it? Isn't that amazing how it's not going to come from the great and the powerful?
All hanging off
yeah.
the tips.
Yeah, and the fruit's so heavy, it almost you think it's going to break them, but they... Yeah, it bends it down, but it survives because that's the way he's telling you it's going to come. And what that tells me when he says that, he's telling me where the production's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, you're not even going to get your production brought to fruition because I'm going to cut it down. I'm going to see that it's not going to survive because it's not being done with the right attitude in your heart. Okay? So I'm going to take it away. And they shall be left altogether to the fowls of the mountains and to the beasts of the earth. Now, let me show you something here, a context if you never caught it. He said, they shall be left together to the fowls of the mountains and the beasts of the earth. You know, the fowls of the mountains and the beasts of the earth don't eat branches.
They eat the fruit.
Yeah, but what are those branches?
We are.
There you go. See? So he's going to tell you they're going to be consumed by the beast, and these birds, their fowls are called birds of prey in the language. So these birds of prey and beasts of the earth, dumb beasts of the earth, the language says, they're the ones that's going to consume these branches and these sprigs. So what's the branches and sprigs have to be? It's people.
Or the things that we don't necessarily need.
Yeah. Well, no. He's saying they're bringing something out in their harvest, but they're never going to bring it to fruitation because he's going to make sure they don't. See, so the ideas and thoughts that we think we're going to get.
So he's still protecting us by...
He's protecting us from our own self.
Mm-hmm.
See, what we think we're going to get, all those expectations that we get by religion or by our own thinking or somebody gives us other than from the source it should be by God, from the internal spirit... He's going to protect us. I see that as a wonderful thing. Just like he said in Genesis 1, he protects them in their ignorance. See? So, not a bad thing. And it said, the fowls, that's the birds of prey, shall summer upon them, and all the dumb beasts of the earth shall winter upon them. So, summer and winter, don't that pretty well take care of everything?
Yeah.
All year round? Okay. I mean, you can... And he said... These beasts are going to live and take their substance from those branches and twigs that he cuts away, sprigs that he cuts off. So all the things, they can live off of that dust. What's the serpent's food?
Dust
of the earth. See, it's symbolism again. As long as I live in the dust, what am I?
Serpent.
I'm serpent food. If I'm there, I'm going to get bit by the snake, ain't I? See, and everybody don't realize this is symbolism. You can't live in a double-minded world. You got to go one way or the other. You know, I got that old Chinese proverb I haven't used for a long time. He who sits on the fence gets a sore crotch.
Uh-huh.
You got that one? Okay, you got to get off the fence. You got to go one way or the other. Didn't he say in the Revelation, I'd rather have you hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, I'll vomit you out of my mouth. He said, don't ride the fence. Now that's straight up scripture. That's in the book. Okay? So we know we've got to get off the fence and go one way or the other. Verse 7. Not in that time, but at that time, whatever time that time might be, whenever it is for you, okay, shall the present or the gift of homage, and what is a gift of homage? What would you think in your mind? Any ideas?
Honor.
Well, a gift of honor, a gift of worship, a gift of humility, showing it towards someone, preferably God, you know, not the one you create, but the true God. And there's only one of them. No matter what world you come from, what religion you come from, there's only one God, isn't there? And I know the church world just don't see it clearly, but God created all people and created everybody to come back home. Okay? And they're all looking at Him, but they're looking through different eyes, that's all. So I don't care what world they come from. I don't care if they're in the deserts, the swamps, the mountains, whether they're yellow, red, pink, black, green, or purple. I don't care what color they are. They're all God's children, and they all got one Father. Whether they like it or not, and it may not be popular for me to say it, but I don't care. It's truth. I'm going to say it. And they're all going to come back. But they're going to all bring homage to Him. He said the people, these ones that are tall and the smooth, the ones to be feared from this time onward, the mighty, the oppressive. We know we're really not talking about a people, but it uses that for the same process down here. If you notice, verse 2 and verse 7 are both speaking a lot of the same thing. And it's still speaking the same thing. What we talked about in there in verse 2 about the tall and the smooth to be feared at this time onward, they were mighty and oppressive and they were divided. So he's telling me something here. It's not about people, is it? But it's about what's going on inside of me. All these negative thoughts that I had within me that were double-minded, that were the land was separated, their mind was still separated in multiple parts. So it's unstable. That were terrible, that were mighty, you know. They're going to turn their thoughts, and I'd say it this way, God's going to put that new heart in you.
Well, if you think about the tall and the smooth, humanity or people are the only thing that have that type of
appearance.
Appearance, because everything else is either feathered or furred.
So even though it's refreshed in the natural, like religion wants to do, they fluff you and buff you to try to save your flesh, right? So it's not going to work. But at that time, he's going to change what has to be changed. Okay? And they're going to, said the Lord, said they'll, at that time shall the gift of homage be brought to the Lord of hosts of a people scattered and peeled, that's the tall and the smooth, and a people that are terrible or to be feared from this time onward, a nation mighty and oppressive, whose land and rivers have spoiled or divided, to the place of the name, and that's the nature and character, that's the word shame in Hebrew, of the Lord of hosts, the Mount Zion. Okay? Now, what does Mount Zion represent? Third day, tabernacles, the mind of Christ, the highest realm of God, right? So he said, every thought that you have that's negative, God's not going to destroy that. He's just going to take your mind and create it, just redirect it to the other direction. So my thoughts will not be directed to the natural, to the dark side, to the ignorance, coming out of the ignorance of humanity, but it'll be turned to the wisdom of God.
Back to its origin.
Back to where it came from. And isn't that exactly what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes? When we die, the dust returns to the earth, and the spirit would encompass all those thoughts, wouldn't it? Directed right back to the Father, and said they all go back to God who gave it. So it's not an issue of being smart. You have to sit down with this book and read it and listen to what God says to you. You do have to have a little foundation. I agree. I give you that. But this is not about an external thing, because God is an internal God. He dwells in His people according to His words. So I got to realize that this God is in me, and this is all about what He's doing in me. And if I can't see that, then I'm wasting my time. I might as well go play golf this morning or something, or go fishing, or ride my bike, or whatever, you know. Oh, I can afterwards, yeah, but okay. But I mean, I might as well not even be doing this. Yeah, I mean, I must not be doing anything. What's the point? If there's nothing that can change my life, what's the point of coming to church? What's the point of coming together in fellowship? Most people, and I feel sorry for them, when they come into a church or a meeting, they go out with nothing more than a flash. You know, they got revved up a little bit, and they go out, and they're just as dumb, if not more confused, when they leave than when they come in. And most of them do. I had a man one time tell me when I was ministering in the jail system, he said, how come every time I go to a church, well, when I get in church, I feel so good, and I walk out, I feel like hell. I said, it's because you didn't get anything. He said, but I felt good. I said, just for a short while. I said, they were playing with your emotions. They didn't give you the truth to face the reality of when you walk back out. So when you walk back out in reality, that thing sucker punched you again, took you right out again. He said, I never thought about it that way. I said, I'm sure you didn't, or you wouldn't be doing it. Are you going to go back and do it again? He said, wouldn't be worth it, would it? And I said, no. He said, well, I thought you was a preacher. You thought that you'd want everybody to go to church. I said, no, going to church could be hazardous to your health. Seriously, seriously hazardous. So it's not about going to church. It's about having that relationship with God and understanding something. And He'll give it to you. Doesn't the book even say that? If you lack wisdom, ask God, and He gives to all men, all humanity. If you really want it, but if you hear it, you know what you got to do? You got to change. You're going to have to change. You can't stay that double-minded person. If the rivers have cut your land in two, it's time to re-divert that water. Isn't it? Redirect it and put it back in that single stream.
Is that just the Ethiopia, all this, the blackness?
Ignorance?
Is that just those dark pixels?
Absolutely.
If you feed on that, it's to be feared.
Absolutely. So you feed from the negative side, you got fear.
You're clogging up your connection with God.
Anxiety, fear, and worry are the thieves of peace.
Clogging up that. Whatever that pipe or whatever your connection
conduit.
You've got, yeah, your conduit.
Mm-hmm.
You're clogging that up with that dark stuff that's to be feared.
Got off your inner guidance.
That's right.
Your GPS is
God's positioning system.
It's clogging
right?
that.
Yeah.
I say that out in public, the next thing you know, you might see it on all these old church signs.
God's positioning.
Come find your GPS.